quiet as we walked through the abandoned forest towards the ruined camp, his eyes flitting to every scarred tree we passed. It was obvious that the destruction and silence weighed on him heavily. "So, Lear, we finished that quest." Constantine slid beside me as we walked. "Oh?" I exclaimed with a bit of confusion before I caught on. "The spider quest!" I remembered that I still had one more alert pending that I had yet to read. I quickly brought up the quest update. "Quest complete. Cleansing the webwood. Unique. Group. You have successfully thinned the spiders infesting the webwood and killed the ether-warped webwood queen. Return to Bon Aldwyn for a reward. Spiders slain 1,000 out of 1,000. Ether-warped webwood queen slain 1 out of 1. Difficulty very hard. Reward, experience, reputation, 100 gold pieces. Reward proportional to percentage contributed. Bonus, unknown." I quickly scanned over the quest details, a smile breaking out on my face. "Finally, we'll have some gold to our name."
"Don't know exactly what they are, but I'm sure they're used for crafting." Constantine had continued to speak while I was looking over the quest details. "Plus, we also found that bone wand that the shaman was using, which Halcyon claimed. He said that it had pretty decent stats on it." "Here's all the loot," Constantine finished, handing me a bunch of goods. There really wasn't much. "Colossal mana-infused spider claw times 2. Massive mana-infused spider carapace times 4. Mana-infused ichor times 200. Vial of raw ether times 50. Thanks, I replied, catching on, then juggling to add everything to my inventory while carrying the massive skull. If nothing else, I can use it for repairs and maybe something neat with the ether. Hopefully, Constantine said. We have a raging river of it, after all.
Yeah, I guess we do, I said thoughtfully. As we walked towards the abandoned expedition camp, Caius and Constantine caught me up on the end of the Spider Queen fight.
"After you fell into the ley line with the puma, I was able to take care of the queen's heart without any problem," Constantine said.
"It went berserk with pain at that point, though," Caius added. "It really gored Donovan, and Drace took a few more hits, too."
"Soon as the heart stopped beating, I lit out of the cavity." Constantine mimed a leaping motion with his hand. "A good thing, too, since the entire thing just kind of caught fire."
"Well, caught mage fire?" Caius tested the word. "It was blue fire, the same sort Halcyon conjures."
"Yeah, we didn't know what was happening, and with you gone, we grabbed Donovan and ran out of the room to heal," Constantine continued to explain. "A few more seconds in the ether sickness would have done Donovan and Drace in."
"After a while, the queen must have burned herself out," Caius finished, "because we got 1,000 experience points for the fight, plus a small bit for the hundreds of spiders caught in the trap. We're almost halfway to level 11.
"Sweet!"
I exclaimed, happily summoning my experience bar. "Compared to what we've been getting before, that's amazing. Current experience, 1,303 out of 21,300. Hang on, that's not right." I frowned, looking at my bar. "Oh shit, I left leadership experience on. You have 8 leadership skill points unspent."
"Well shit," I sighed with conflicting emotions. "I left leadership experience on, now I have 8 points."
"Ouch." Constantine winced and then shrugged.
"Levels can always come later, though. The leadership buffs are pretty powerful."
"I suppose," I said as I opened the leadership menu and split my newly gained leadership points between increased health regeneration and increased mana regeneration. I quickly looked over the final point assignments before committing the changes, noting that all future increases to health regeneration would now require 2 leadership points per rank. Increased health regeneration. Increase amount of health regenerated by 5. 5 out of 10. Increased mana regeneration. Increase amount of mana regenerated by 4. 4 out of 10. Increased movement. Increase mounted and unmounted speed by 4%. 4 out of 10.
Well, maybe that'll curb just a little bit of the loss in mana recovery, I grumbled to myself as I waved the menu out of my vision.
When we arrived back to the expedition camp, I was somewhat surprised to see that very little had changed since we rushed away in a hurry. I could see a number of disturbances in the fallen branches that vaguely lined up with what I remembered from the pitched battle against the predators earlier in the day today. That battle feels like it was ages ago. The exhaustion of a long day suddenly hit me like a truck. Was it this morning the Webwood Horror invaded Aldford? I sighed as I set the queen's skull on the ground in front of me, then sat on its brow as a makeshift chair. Sierra and Drace were busy showing Donovan the remains of the camp, each poking through the fallen brush as they pulled free the remains of a scorched tent or a torn pack.
"The dirty ones preyed upon this camp,"
Amaranth sent as he lay down beside me.
"Their scent is faint, yet still lingers."
"Dirty ones?" I queried. "Goblins?"
"I know not, goblins. The scent is similar to the dirty one found in the magic cave we just departed,"
Amaranth replied. "Those are called goblins," I explained to the cat. "That is what their kind is named, just like my kind is referred to as humans."
"Goblins. Humans."
Once more, my familiar tested the words.
"Names are indeed useful things."
The puma sniffed the air in front of it.
"There are other scents here. Cleaner, yet not goblin."
"That must be the rest of the expedition," I thought to Amaranth excitedly. "Can you tell me where they went, by their scent?" Without a word, the cat stood up and began to prowl around the camp, sniffing the air and pawing at the ground. Donovan looked at the familiar with a bit of nervousness, but Amaranth quickly circled the camp and left the clearing towards the east.
"The scent fades,"
Amaranth sent with a notable tinge of disappointment as it trotted back towards the camp.
"It has been too long, and the many legs musk obscures the trail. I do not smell any blood or death, however."
"Damn. At least the expedition members might still be alive. Thanks for trying."
"Worry not,"
Amaranth replied.
"The scent is notable. I will recall it if it crosses my path again."
"Are we done here?"
I called out tiredly to the group, though my attention was focused on Donovan. "We're burning light and still have a long way to go." Donovan shook his head in despair.
"There's nothing here for me." "Yeah, let's go home, Lear," Sierra breathed, echoing my exhaustion. "I think I'm done with this day."
"Home," Sierra's comment echoed through my mind as we set off to Aldford. "Yeah. This is home now." We returned to Aldford like heroes. Tired, dirty, grumpy heroes. When we had left the village this morning, our armor was new, clean, with a pleasing scent of worked leather. Now it was tattered, covered in dirt, sweat, and bile, each of us smelling like a charnel house. Our journey back to Aldford was uneventful, if long. We took the dogleg path once again, traveling southward to the western side of Crater Lake and skirting the shoreline as we made our way back east. Burnt out from a day of nervous aggression, the majority of the spiderlings nesting along the forest line were content to leave us be as we passed. The few that didn't, we mechanically slew with barely a second thought. As we climbed out of Crater Lake, we emerged into the final rays of the day as the sun began to set in the distant horizon. The sight of Aldford in the evening light warmed our hearts, giving us an extra spring in our step. Even from far away, we could still see villagers hard at work, intent on using every last second of light to finish digging the ditches around the village. From what I could see at this distance, they had made great progress since we left. The first ditch was now filled with triboli, a formidable obstacle that no invader would be able to cross without paying a steep price in blood. The second ditch was well on its way to being completed, with perhaps another 50 or 60 feet left to be dug out. I let out a sigh of relief that I didn't realize I'd been holding. The village is safe.
"Halt! Identify yourselves!"
An alert voice belonging to Loen shouted from the distance.
"Loen!"
Drace shouted with a smile on his face.
"It's us!"
"Sir! You're back!"
Lowen's voice exclaimed happily, then shouted something towards the village. Immediately we saw all the villagers laboring in the distance perk up, then speed towards the northern side of Aldford to greet us. Before long the entire village had turned out, excitedly waiting for our arrival. We were greeted with exuberant cheers as we crossed the fortified northern entrance and entered Aldford proper. The militia greeted us with a formal salute, standing at attention in their fine new armor. I saw the bond standing just off to the side, clapping along with the crowd, relief at our safe return evident on his face.
"The Webwood Queen has been slain!" I shouted, tossing the massive skull to the ground in front of the roaring crowd with a thump, sending up a small spray of dust. "The spiders of the Webwood will no longer threaten Aldford!"
The villagers cheered even louder, the good news causing them to temporarily glaze over the fact that our group had grown by 2 members, one of them being a giant azure-furred puma.
"Sir, your guests!"
Lauren exclaimed after allowing the crowd to cheer for a moment, clearly eyeing my familiar as he shouted above the noise of the crowd.
"Ah, you're right!"
I knocked a knuckle to my forehead and indicated both Donovan and Amaranth to the crowd, enjoying the theater I was putting on. The cheers quickly faded as they spotted the wild cat, filling the air with a pregnant silence as some in the crowd took half a step back.
"Allow me to introduce a pair of new guests to the village," I called out loudly to the village, making a point to speak clearly. "First, we have Donovan Kane of the Iberian Mages Guild. He is of the same expedition as Natasha, and was instrumental in the death of the Webwood Queen."
I heard a few faint grumbles from the crowd, with their attention still focused on Amaranth.
"Next, we have Amaranth,"
I indicated the puma, who flicked an ear at the crowd.
"He is a creature of this land, and I have bonded with him as my familiar. On my word, he will not harm anyone, save in self-defense."
More whispers emerged from the crowd as they watched the azure-furred cat intently.
"Furthermore, an item I feel that is important to point out, Amaranth is an intelligent creature and can understand every word we say. I ask that you treat him as any other member of our group."
There was a pause of silence as the villagers absorbed that last bit of information.
"May I be the first to welcome you both to Aldford?"
Aldwyn exclaimed, as he stepped forward from the crowd before the silence could get awkward. I noticed a flare of recognition cross Donovan's face as he shook the bond's hand, but the bond didn't seem to notice or respond in any way I could see. "Well, I wonder what that's all about." Aldwyn then walked over to Amaranth, who had since sat down to regard the crowd around us. For a heartbeat, Aldwyn seemed confused as to how to properly greet the cat, but then held out a hand anyway. To all of our amazement, Amaranth's ears flicked twice in amusement. Then he lifted a massive paw that enveloped the bond's hand.
"Strange," Amaranth said. "Why does he grasp a paw in greeting?"
I could not help but smile slightly at my familiar's question. "It is a sign of peace and trust, also used to demonstrate that you're not carrying a weapon."
"Have I broken trust, then?"
Amaranth asked with concern.
"My claws are part of my paw."
"I do not think you have anything to worry about," I soothed, "so long as it was done in good faith." Aldwyn stepped back after shaking Amaranth's paw and addressed everyone.
"I suppose we can all turn in for the night, now that our faithful adventurers have returned. I'm sure they're more than looking forward to a hot meal and rest for the night."
The crowd let out another cheer, happy to be finished digging for the day.
"Along with the bath,"
Aldwyn coughed, close enough for me to hear.
"Gods!"
After a quick dip in the river, at Aldwyn's polite insistence, we soon found ourselves crammed into the bond's private study above the town hall, to fill him in on our day. It had taken a bit of jostling to get the entire party, plus Donovan, Natasha, and Jenkins into the small room at first. Once we all sat down and stopped moving, we each had enough space not to feel overly crowded. I had explained our portion of the day first, giving the Bond the major highlights of our adventure, along with the events surrounding Amaranth and the Spider Queen, leaving out the business about House Daenerys for the time being, in addition to my suspicions of the ruin being a translocation hub. Those matters I planned to bring up without Donovan being present.
"Then the next thing I knew, I was surrounded by spiders,"
Donovan shook his head tiredly as he explained his half of the story,
"and lost 5 days in the blink of an eye. After that, well, all passed, as Lyrian explained."
"Were there no other clues at the camp, telling us what happened to the rest of our people?"
Natasha asked plaintively. "Nothing we could find," I answered, shaking my head, slowly stroking Amaranth's fur. Amaranth could smell goblins in the area, but there was no trace that anyone was killed at the clearing.
"They may still be alive, then,"
Natasha said softly as she shook her head.
"But why would the goblins take prisoners?"
"We don't know," Jenkins replied. "When they attacked here, they tried to do the same. They even had an enclosed wagon and horses to whisk everyone away."
"Hang on. Goblins use horses?"
Caius asked aloud with confusion.
"Isn't that strange in itself?"
"Not particularly," Alduin explained with a shrug. "During the war, it wasn't uncommon to see a handful of goblin archers on horseback supporting the orcs. Truthfully speaking, we feared a dozen goblin skirmishers on horseback more than an equal number of orcs on foot." "That is true," Jenkins nodded in agreement. "There were a handful of goblin tribes that realized horses had more practical uses aside from food and glue. Hell, even some orcs figured it out, when they could find horses large enough at least."
"Well, Caius coughed at Jenkins's explanation. "I didn't think they were that smart."
"They may appear to be primitive, savage even," Alduin spoke, his eyes recalling something from his past. "But they are far from stupid."
"I suppose," Caius conceded.
"Hang on a minute,"
Sierra began, seeing an opportunity to jump into the conversation.
"If they brought a wagon, that means they had an overland route to get it here. A wagon wouldn't be convenient to pull over rocky or broken ground."
Jenkins grunted thoughtfully.
"That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that."
"That would discount Crater Lake and the surrounding forest to the northwest in the lower elevation,"
I added, recalling the layout of the area.
"Unless they cut a path through the forest we haven't managed to come across."
"Perhaps, but aside from the forest, the rest of the land is reasonably smooth, if not hilly, in all directions,"
Alduin replied with a sigh.
"The only real exception being much further to the west, where it eventually becomes a network of ridges and cliffs that make the land unpassable, at least by convenient means."
"What direction did the goblins attack from again?" I asked Jenkins in the barn. My mind was weary, and it was difficult to recall the details of the last few days.
"They attacked through the gate with the bridge that leads over the river,"
Jenkins replied slowly.
"That would be the southeast corner of the village."
"Then it would make the most sense that they came from somewhere from that direction," I reasoned. "If their plan was to abduct everyone, they would have come the most direct way."
"True," Alduin agreed after a moment of thought. "I would have done the same against an unsuspecting enemy. Speed would be essential." "Sure happened fucking fast,"
Jenkins muttered under his breath.
"With the adventures a few days away, and knowing nothing about the goblins,"
Sierra spoke up, nodding her head towards Constantine and Natasha,
"we should set up some roving patrols, covering everything from the southeast to the northeast."
"That's a good idea," I said in full agreement. "Maybe we'll get lucky and trip over one of the two groups early."
"Great,"
Sierra said happily.
"The three of us will head out first thing in the morning."
"Explain the name Adventurer to me,"
Amaranth asked me as Sierra spoke.
"These are interlopers to our territory."
"Of a kind," I replied, searching for the right words.
"Adventurers are those who seek fame, fortune, and power, often wandering far and wide to find it. Each is motivated by different desires. It is difficult to predict what they will want when they arrive. Some may seek to join our village peacefully. Others may decide to drive us from it or even destroy it.
So, you seek to protect your den and litter mates until their intentions are known?
Amaranth asked, a sense of understanding coming across the link we shared. We do, and we take steps to ensure we are not caught off guard by their arrival.
Wise,
the puma commented.
I will assist in this. I am not one to lay about the den like a fat kitten on a teat.
Amaranth has volunteered to help as well, I told the scouts. You can arrange between one another how best to cover your ground tomorrow. Sierra looked at Amaranth with surprise, then nodded. We'll be happy to have him along. How is the day here? I turned to ask the knight. I saw great progress on the defenses.
Indeed, Alduin nodded happily. Everyone was quite motivated today, and a bit more experienced at the task, so we made exceptional progress. That's even after Jenkins conscripted a pair of villagers to assist in his crafting of the Triboli and help repair the damage from the attack this morning.
Wait, there was an attack? Donovan asked with confusion.
Yeah, Dre sighed, recalling this morning's events. An ether-warped spider invaded the village this morning.
And two of us died in order to keep it from destroying the village, Constantine finished tersely while looking at Donovan.
Ah, I could tell that new bit of information added to the weight Donovan was carrying. I see. You did what you had to in the heat of the moment, I told the mage, realizing it was time to put this issue to rest, then looked around the room as I spoke. We sit here now with the luxury of hindsight, and we can't truly say that we would have done it differently if we were in your shoes. What is important is that we survived.
Indeed, the Bond spoke with a nod.
Thank you. Donovan breathed with a sigh of relief as he stood out of his chair. I appreciate your understanding in this.
Donovan swayed slightly on his feet as he turned to look back at the door.
If I may beg permission to excuse myself for the night, I really must retire. I'm no longer sure how long I've been awake, and I feel like I may collapse at any moment.
Oh, certainly.
The Bond rose with his arm outstretched, indicating the door, as he attempted to walk around his desk, to find that any path out of the room was blocked by at least three adventurers.
We could all probably use a bite to eat, then some sleep,
Halcyon said, hopefully.
We can all shuffle out if there's nothing else.
Nothing that can't wait until morning, Alduin replied graciously. After the day you've all had, I certainly won't begrudge you some rest.
As everyone rose and began to extract themselves from the room, I quickly signaled the Bond that I wished to speak with him privately. I'll be down in a bit, I told Constantine as he closed the door behind him, leaving only Alduin, Amaranth, and myself in the room. With everyone having left the room, Amaranth had chosen to curl up near the center of the study, no longer pressed against me.
Is everything all right, Lyrian?
Alduin asked, while smiling at Amaranth, then myself.
I didn't expect for you to return with a puma, of all things, nor the leader of the missing expedition.
It's been an interesting day,
I replied with a sigh, looking at Amaranth settle into his new spot. Do you know anything of Donovan, or met him before?
Him?
The Bond shook his head.
Not at all. To be honest, he doesn't seem to be the type that should have been assigned to lead such an expedition.
I agree.
I rubbed my tired eyes as I recalled Donovan's expression when he first met Alduin.
He seemed to have recognized you, however.
Me, Alduin replied with some surprise. It's been a while since I was in the capital, but I am one of the few knights of Iberia to actually survive the war. Perhaps he has a good memory for faces.
He speaks in half-truths,
Amaranth commented from his spot on the floor, chin resting on his paws.
I can hear his heart quiver from here.
Perhaps,
I offered, as my mind mulled over Amaranth's secret insight. There is an issue I wanted to raise with you, however.
Oh?
Donovan let slip that his expedition was funded by proxy through the Mages Guild by House Daenerys. They were searching for the ley line and indirectly the ruin that we had found today. At first glance, it appears to be a translocation hub, something that I believe could be used to greatly speed travel across the continent, or between here and Iberia. I didn't know what I expected Alduin's reaction to be when I told him of the house's involvement, but him slamming both hands onto his desk and practically shouting,
"What does that bitch have her hands in now?"
wasn't high on my list. Okay, it wasn't even on it at all.
What?
I asked, shocked by the bond's sudden outburst.
"I am sorry, Illyrian."
The knight's face was completely red with anger.
"It appears that no matter how far we push the frontiers, Iberian politics are not far behind. Something I had thought I left for good."
"Why don't you tell me what's going on?" I offered calmly. "Then I can be appropriately outraged on your behalf as well. First of all, who is that bitch?"
"That bitch happens to be Matriarch Aemilia Daenerys of House Daenerys, the Dowager Queen, or the Queen Mother of Iberia."
Alduin spoke evenly after taking a deep breath.
"She is King Swain's mother, and the late Prince Rhaenyra's wife."
"Okay," I said slowly, nodding at Alduin to continue.
"She and I have had a rather tumultuous history over the years."
The bond seemed to be lost in thought as he spoke. "You knew the queen?" I asked with a bit of surprise in my voice.
"Aye, you could say that."
Alduin scowled as he spoke.
"I was forced to see that foul harpy nearly every day of my life for nearly 20 years. If it weren't for the prince, I'd have leaped off the bulwark and prayed for a yard of steel in my gut."
"The prince?" I leaned forward in my chair, waving hands up in a calming motion. "Alduin, Frederick, calm down. You're not making any sense."
"I had hoped to find a fresh start here, as much as an old man like myself could find."
The bond slumped back into his chair with a loud sigh, still clenching his fists.
"But it seems like my past is determined to keep pace with me no matter where I go."
"Alduin, help me out here," I asked the knight. "Slow down and start at the beginning."
"Are you sure?" "It is a long story," Alduin warned, "and involves a great deal of politics."
"I can't help if I don't know what's going on," I replied, leaning back into my chair.
"Okay."
Alduin inhaled a deep breath before continuing.
"For the last 27 years, up until a year ago, I had the honor of being one of Prince Rhaenyra's bodyguards before he died."
Alduin began to deflate as he spoke.
"A royal knight charged with his safety."
"A royal knight?" I echoed in surprise. I suspected there was more to Alduin's past than he let on, but this?
"I first met him when he turned 13.
Alduin nodded at me as he began to reminisce.
"I was young, barely 25, when they pulled me off the wall to assist in teaching the prince the ways of war. In many ways, he was both a brother and son I'd never had."
The bond continued to dig through his memories.
"We became close friends, at least as much as the heir of a kingdom could be to one of his subjects. Years flew by, the prince growing to become a fine young man and a fierce commander against the orc invaders. But as King Cyril's health declined, the nobility began to insist that the prince be wed and ensure that the dynasty be preserved, lest some tragedy befall both king and prince and leave the kingdom in turmoil."
I nodded to show the bond I was still following.
"After a great deal of politicking, Aemilia was chosen as the best candidate, largely in part because the crown needed House Daenerys's coffers and magical backing to counterbalance the growing political discord the other houses were displaying, in hopes of keeping the kingdom unified.
Unfortunately, that meant Amelia had to be pulled from her study of magic at the Mage's Guild in order to fulfill her role as a scion of her house. Once Amelia found out, she was understandably enraged. Instead of doing her duty, however, let's just say, I'm certain Thaddeus, Amelia's father, would have gladly bankrupted his house just to rid himself of that banshee at that point.
So Amelia, I take, was difficult to get along with once she arrived at the palace? I asked hesitantly.
Gods! If she were just merely difficult to get along with, it would have been an incalculable improvement over her true disposition.
Alduin snorted with mock laughter.
She was a right terror to anyone who could not harness magic, believing them to be subsentient, little better than furniture. The idea that she would be married to a magicless brute of a warrior was abhorrent to her. Within a month after the wedding, she had all but physically chased every courtier from the palace and alienated practically every other house.
She didn't want to marry the prince just because he didn't have magic? I said with a bit of surprise. I could understand outrage at being torn from a world you loved, and a political marriage was far from ideal, but eventually becoming queen had to count for something, especially to someone who grew up in a noble house and knew such things were possible. But hating people just because they didn't have magic? That just sounds exhausting.
She did not want to marry at all, Alduin exclaimed. Rhaenyra made it abundantly clear she was able to pursue other romantic interests, should she have wished, but for all the interest she showed in men, or women, she might as well have had a fiery pit leading straight to hell between her legs. I never knew the details, but I'm certain the better part of a brewery was needed to give Rhaenyra the courage to bed her.
The Bond made a gesture with his hands, implying the mechanics of the night.
Then, months later, barely an hour after Swain was born, the woman had the nerve to test the child for magical aptitude. When the test showed no spark of magic within the new ball of life she held in her hands, she gave it away to a retainer, barely even deigning to look at the baby, and ordered them to leave.
She did not! I exclaimed, shaking my head at the picture the Bond had painted. What did she do with her time, then? If she'd driven everyone away around her and didn't even take an interest in her child.
She locked herself away in the royal apartments, studying whatever magic caught her fancy. Remember, Iberia itself is a ruin from a civilization ages past. Even after all these years, hidden chambers and repositories are still being found somewhat regularly.
Alduin shook his head at the digression.
At first we kept Swain nearby, hoping that she would reconsider her attitude towards the child. But one day, a relic she was researching activated, nearly consuming the infant. When pressed for details, her only comment was to apologize that she had missed. The boy was kept separate after that, and he never grew up right for it.
Alduin sighed.
Rhaenyra was too caught up in the war and shouldering his father's duties to give the boy the proper attention he needed, and I'm saddened to say that young Swain took very much after his mother. He regards people as mere playthings, and was far from ready to be king when Rhaenyra died.
A silence fell upon the room as I slowly digested what Alduin had just told me, the sudden revelation surprising me.
I was with him that day, not so long ago,
Alduin said, giving me a haunted look as tears gleamed in his eyes.
Our dreams were coming true all around us. For the first time in 4 decades, the orc tribes were in full retreat, the losses they had sustained large enough to keep them at bay for at least a generation, maybe two, until their numbers grew again. We would finally be able to see the lands the orcs hid from us beyond the ridge, to have a chance to explore. It was not meant to be.
A tear rolled down Alduin's face as he rubbed his face.
400 men and women rode with the prince's vanguard. 6 of us returned to Iberia. Within a day of our return, 3 put themselves into a noose. Another fell into the bottle. The last simply disappeared.
And you made it here, I said, if only to myself.
I did,
Alduin affirmed as he wiped his hands on a handkerchief.
After a while.
So, I ventured carefully, how did the queen react?
She departed from the palace almost immediately after Rhaenyra's death, returning back to the House Daenerys estates,
Alduin replied, acknowledging my question.
I don't know if young Swain threw her out or if she left of her own accord. I didn't care enough to find out, as King Cyril's heart finally broke when he heard of Rhaenyra's death.
Oh, I sat up in my chair, remembering Sierra's description of events a few days ago when they first arrived.
We celebrated the bitter end of a 4-decade-long war by burying father and son together, the first and second of the royal line to lay within the Crypt of Kings.
Alduin's voice broke as he relived the events.
At the funeral, everywhere I looked, I saw eyes that resented my survival, wishing that I had traded places with the prince, where it's possible I would have. Within a week of the funeral, Thaddeus Daenerys also conveniently passed away, the other scions of the house abdicating in favor of Aemilia Daenerys, who was installed as matriarch of the house at the ripe old age of 39. Her first action was to denounce the king, her very son, and distance herself from the throne.
Alduin sat in silence for a moment as he lost himself in thought.
For a time, it seemed like we were going to descend into civil war. None of the noble houses stood directly with the crown. Some were even pitted against one another as long-buried feuds grew bloody. Without an external enemy to unify us, we quickly turned on one another.
Alduin then indicated himself.
Then the rumors began, centering on me.
You? I said with some surprise. Why?
I don't truly know.
Alduin shrugged once again.
I had retired from active service, content to wallow in my own grief and misery by myself. The rumors began harmlessly, that I was secretly a bastard of this house or that house. Laughable things, really. Before long, however, they turned darker, suggesting that I had been a paid assassin to infiltrate the royal guard, and to see the prince dead if the opportunity presented itself.
That's insane, I exclaimed with surprise. You served your country to the best of your ability. How could they even think that?
I don't know, Lyrian, but there were far too many rumors to rebuke, and before long I wasn't even able to find a baker that would sell me a loaf of bread, no matter the coin I paid. Within a season I found myself no longer welcome in Iberia.
I could hear the pain and frustration in Alduin's voice as he spoke.
Then one day I received a letter, penned by Matriarch Daenerys's hand. She berated me for becoming such a divisive figure in Iberia, for allowing the houses to use me as they pit themselves against one another in their feuds.
What world does this woman live in? I interrupted the Bond, my heart roiling at the woman's gall to accuse such a thing. You were grieving. You didn't allow anything.
She was content to remain aloof, while the other houses squabbled. But once the feuds began to affect her house,
Alduin mimed a chopping motion.
She addressed the problem with a brutal finality, terrifying the other houses into compliance.
So how did that affect you, then?
In her letter, she determined that I was a painful reminder of days lost.
It visibly pained Alduin to say those words.
And that it would be better for everyone if I retired somewhere out of public sight to let the kingdom heal in peace. It was promised that she would put a swift end to the rumors that plagued my name, then offered me a loan to secure a distant plot of land far away from Iberia, along with a handful of tenants, villagers.
So, you left, I said, stating the obvious.
Oh, I took her offer, all right.
The Bond sounded angry at himself.
What choice did I have? I hadn't eaten in days by the time her letter arrived.
I couldn't even leave my home without being beset by thugs. I was so angered by my kingdom's abandonment of me, I took the poisoned fruit she was offering and swallowed it whole.
What were her terms?
Surprisingly fair. I was granted rights as the legal head of the settlement and the freedom to name it as I wished. I also secured the promise of additional settlers with favorable dispositions to my leadership to come in about a month's time from now, if the village was progressing adequately.
Alduin recited softly.
Her requirements included a substantial return on her investment and the promise to never return to Iberia.
So she exiled you, in all but name, I said.
She did,
Alduin affirmed with a bitter laugh.
It is ironic. All my life I had wondered what was over the ridge to the north of Iberia, and now that I am here.
He indicated the walls around him and sighed.
All I'm reminded about is Iberia.
We sat in companionable silence for a few minutes as Alduin mulled through his memories and I considered the day's events.
"What do you recommend we do about the ruin we found?" I asked Alduin after giving him a sympathetic nod.
"Donovan wants to claim it for the Mages Guild and House Daenerys by extension. I am not so sure I wish to hand it over to them. If they discover a way to repair the translocation grid..."
"You are right not to trust them. Emilia plays by rules us lesser mortals can barely understand. She had a chance to rule Iberia and found it not worth her time. If she has turned her gaze here, it is most certainly for her own benefit, not the kingdom's,"
the Bon explained with a wave of his hand.
"Donovan isn't the one to negotiate with in this matter. He may be the titular head of this lost expedition, but I am all but certain House Daenerys has included an agent of their own that holds the true power. Emilia wouldn't have sent such an expedition without including someone firmly in her camp."
"And with that mystery person potentially dead or captured by goblins?"
"Then do nothing until approached by the house. Or..."
Alduin's face broke into a smile as an idea crossed his mind.
"Claim it for yourself. Gods, that would piss her off to no end."
"Claim it?" I frowned. "With just the seven of us to defend it? To what end? Even if we could repair it, how long would it stay in our hands?" Alduin shook his head as if chiding a small child.
"Lyrian, you think too small. I didn't mean for you to claim it. I meant for you to form a guild and claim it."
Chapter 33. Saturday, February 9th, 2047, 7:40 a.m., Oldford.
Rhythmic pounding woke me up from a night of strange and disjointed dreams. Despite my exhaustion, I had stayed up longer than I had hoped, thinking about Alduin's words. Creating and managing a guild was a difficult process on its own, but creating one and leaping headfirst into politics you didn't quite understand? That was a recipe for trouble. I rubbed my eyes while collecting my wits, a broken dream of me chasing a spiderling wearing a golden crown surfacing in my mind. I vaguely recalled that it had stolen something from me, but couldn't quite remember what. As I tried to catch it, a strange goblin carrying a jar of blue honey laughed at me, slowly disappearing as I chased the spider.
Ugh.
Catching up on missed sleep always gave me weird dreams, today being no exception. Considering how long the day was yesterday, my brain definitely needed the rest.
What is that hammering noise? If we're going to stay in Oldford any length of time, we really need to build our own house.
A quick look around told me that the rest of the party was already up and out of bed, and that I was the last one to wake. Standing up off my cot with a stretch, I peered around the blinds set up around the cots, spotting the skull of the Webwood Queen being held up high by three villagers on ladders as Jenkins fastened it to the wall.
"Morning!"
I greeted the villagers as I made my way across the town hall, quickly smoothing down stray hairs as I crossed the room.
"Need any help?"
"Oh, Lear!"
Jenkins greeted me with a slight echo, half of his upper body thrust into the skull's maw as he worked on something out of my sight.
"There's a plaque down there on the table. Pass it up in a moment.
Plaque? I asked, spotting a dark piece of wood on a nearby table. Curious, I picked it up and read the inscription. The Ether-Warped Webwood Queen, slain on Friday, February 8th, 2047. Amaranth, Caius Vale, Constantine Black, Donovan Kane, Drace Cross, Halcyon Katz, Lyrian Rastler, Sierra Rain.
Oh, wow!
I turned the plaque over in my hand and ran my fingers over the inscription.
This is amazing!
Glad you like it, Leah,
Jenkins replied, then quickly addressed his helpers as he pulled himself out of the skull's mouth.
Looks good. Set it down slowly and see if it bears the weight.
Jenkins' assistants gradually let go of the skull, letting it settle onto the mounting. As Jenkins made a few adjustments, I took a step back to admire the trophy. With its massive size, it effortlessly dominated the room, looking down on everyone in the town hall. Placed in the center of the wall, it would forevermore hold the place of honor, being the first boss creature killed near Aldford. I couldn't help but look forward to the day when the entire wall was filled with trophies and stories to go with them.
Perfect! Thanks for the help, guys!
Jenkins dismissed his helpers, grabbing the plaque from my outstretched hand. With their part of the work done, the other villagers gave me a wave as they set off towards their other tasks, carrying their ladders with them.
Just about finished, eh?
Thanks for putting this up, Jenkins, I said, watching him install the plaque where it could easily be read from the ground.
I know worries, he replied with a shrug. You had to fucking fight the thing. I'd rather nail 100 of these skulls to the wall than do that.
Remind me to show you one of its claws, I exclaimed with a laugh, large enough to make a greatsword out of it.
Goods,
Jenkins shook his head.
I believe you, even without seeing it. There.
It didn't take long for Jenkins to fix the plaque firmly on the wall and hop down from his ladder. Any idea where everyone is this morning? I asked Jenkins. I slept in a bit longer than I was expecting.
You needed it.
Jenkins nodded at me understandingly.
Everyone's already moved on with the day. I saw Sierra, Natasha, and Constantine head out this morning, along with your cat, Familiar. Amaranth?
Oh, I said as I tried to send a thought over to Amaranth, but found that he was out of range. I vaguely sensed that he was somewhere off to the east. They must have gotten an early start.
Early enough,
Jenkins said with another shrug.
Drace and Halcyon were getting set in helping with the digging, and Caius, oddly enough, asked to drill with the barn and the militia.
Really? I asked with some surprise. I wonder why.
Not sure.
Jenkins motioned for me to follow him as he grabbed his tools and ladder.
Haven't seen that other mage you brought back today yet. Probably still sleeping.
He's had a rough week, I offered.
Around here, who hasn't?
Jenkins grunted with a fair bit of derision.
Anyway, what's your plan for the day? Your friends hung up all their armor in the workshop, which I can see needs a hell of a lot of mending. But I'm also gonna need the space to keep crafting those Triboli.
I can actually start on the repairs right now, then help out with the Triboli, I replied, happy to get that task out of the way first. We can air the armor out afterward outside.
Don't you want to grab a bite first?
Jenkins asked me with a raised eyebrow.
You just got up.
I stalled while I assessed how I felt. The regular feelings of hunger or thirst just not being there. In fact, I couldn't remember the last time I had eaten something, yet I felt perfectly satiated, all thanks to my new mana-starved trait. I'm doing okay, actually. Plus, I'd rather get started on work. I've already slept through half the morning.
All right. Thanks.
Jenkins barked a short laugh, then nodded.
I need to go check that house that you partially demolished yesterday anyway, so I'll be out of your hair for a bit. I just need to grab a few tools from the shop.
That wasn't entirely my fault, I exclaimed fruitlessly. The stupid thing clobbered me.
Uh-huh,
Jenkins replied flatly.
You should have had the decency to miss the house and make less work for me then.
Right. By the way, on an unrelated note, which one is your house again? I made a mock motion of looking around. Purely out of curiosity, of course.
Bah!
Jenkins exhaled sarcastically as he rolled his eyes.
Here, grab my toolbox. I need to set this ladder down. I'll meet you inside.
Our short journey complete, I grabbed the box out of Jenkins's hand while he set the ladder against the side of the workshop and went inside. True to Jenkins's word, there were four sets of armor hung up on armor racks, looking like they'd been, well, mauled by a horde of spiders, and, in my suit's case, a puma. Guess it served its purpose. The thought crossed my mind as I inspected the battle damage to my suit of armor.
"Morning, Lyrian!"
Rit popped up from behind a crate, then began pushing it back into the corner.
"No!"
I yelped, startled by the young merchant's appearance.
"Rit, what the fuck?"
"Sorry, Lyrian!"
Rit quickly exclaimed, giving me a wave.
"Just organizing all the stuff around here a bit better. I sorted your stuff, too, in case you're looking for it."
Without even giving me a chance to reply, he started pointing out crates.
"That one there is for ore, and that one for smelted bars. Herbs can sit in that one. Spider pots go into that one there."
"Thanks, Rit," I said with a bit of surprise as I tried to quickly absorb the new layout. "Aren't you awake rather early for your schedule?"
"I dumped him out of bed,"
Jenkins said as he briskly walked in through the door, quickly grabbing a handful of tools.
"Jenkins dumped me out of bed,"
Rit echoed, rolling his eyes.
"The bastard."
"Because you had to have him organize the workshop?" I asked, slightly confused.
"No, because I need his lazy ass to pace off and string the final ditch measurements so we can get started on it today."
Jenkins pointed a hammer threateningly at Rit.
"You're standing still. Did you find that string?"
"Yeah,"
Rit squeaked nervously, holding up a spool of twine.
"Did you give Lyrian his money?"
Jenkins shook the hammer once more as he turned to leave.
"Not yet."
"I'll be back here in an hour,"
Jenkins called over his shoulder as he left the workshop.
"That ditch best be strong by the time I get back, or else..."
"Wait, money?" I asked Rit. "Hold on. Why is he, and what exactly did he threaten you with?" Rit sighed as he tossed the spool down onto the workbench with a thump.
"He threatened to toss me into the water unless my work ethic improved."
"Well, that's not so bad," I said with a shrug as I looked at the lazy merchant. "River's like, what, 6 to 9 feet deep there?"
"Not the river, Lyrian. Crater Lake! From the ridge!"
Rit shook his head.
"I hate heights, and I can't swim."
"Oh, I see." I blinked in surprise. "I've done that trip. It was a ton of fun. I plan to never do it again." "So what's this about money?" Rit grunted as he pulled out a bulging sack of coins and handed it over to me, it visibly paining him to let it go.
"That bond told me to give you this as your reward for taking care of the spider queen and the webwood spiders."
Wordlessly, I opened the bag, revealing 100 shiny gold coins gleaming back at me. The same instant, a quest alert appeared across my vision. "Quest complete. Cleansing the webwood. You have claimed your reward. Reward, 10,000 experience points, 100 gold pieces.
Sweet!
Halfway to level 11 with just a single quest. If the experience boost hadn't been enough, my head spun at the realization that I finally had money to my name. Without even trying, ideas began to filter their way into my head on how I could best put the money to use.
"He threw in something extra in there, too,"
Rit said, indicating the bottom of the bag.
"Hmm."
I shook the bag gently as I reached inside, my fingers finding something that was definitely not a coin. Grabbing onto it, I pulled out a finely cut ruby, slightly bigger than my thumbnail.
"Oh, don't lose it,"
Rit cautioned.
"Probably worth at least 15 gold pieces, depending on demand, possibly more."
"Shit, really?" I looked at the tiny little gem in my hand.
"Yeah,"
Rit nodded empathetically.
"They hold value extremely well, and as I'm sure you can tell, are much lighter than gold coins."
I hefted the bag in my hand, still marveling at the pile of coins I'd acquired, finding them rather substantial in weight. "Yeah, I see what you mean."
"So, any idea what you're going to use all that coin for?"
Rit asked optimistically as he began to pile sharpened stakes, markers, on top of one another. Yeah, I replied without missing a beat, grabbing a sharp knife off the workbench and starting to slice through torn stitching in my armor. "Actually, since you're here, I might possibly need your help."
Me?
Rit exclaimed with surprise.
What for?
It might be premature to think about this, but I had a thought to use these coins to kick off Aldford's economy once the adventurers get here. I explained while pulling off a completely shredded piece of chitin from my armor.
By doing what? Paying the adventurers to leave?
Rit snorted, shaking his head.
Soon as they see that amount of coin...
We're gonna get trouble no matter what, I said to Rit while making a stabbing motion with the knife. And we'll deal with it appropriately, but not all adventurers are gonna be complete dicks when they get here. Some will be more than happy to work with us, integrate themselves into our village here.
Say that they do,
Rit said with a disbelieving grunt.
What then? Pay them to behave?
Don't be silly. I began slicing another ragged piece of chitin off. I'll pay them to work.
Work?
Rit asked quizzically, piling all his markers, string, and tools into a wooden box with convenient handles for carrying.
What do you mean?
Whatever we've needed so far, one of us has managed to find it or hunt for it. I used my hands to indicate myself and the absent party members by pointing at the armor. That's working out now when we only have a small number of people in the village to support. But if we start adding in a few dozen adventurers or more, what are we going to do for food, for supplies? Hell, what about the village development? Understanding dawned on Rit's face.
You're going to buy their stuff. Make them go out and supply the village. The promise of work will keep him in line.
Damn right, I continued to explain, making the universal money hand gesture as I rubbed my fingers together. A copper or two for every decent quality leather square they bring us, maybe a silver piece if they can cut and deliver a thick enough tree for our palisade. You get the picture.
I do, Rit said excitedly. I see where you need my help with that, too. You want me to be your broker, in a sense.
You got it, I nodded at Rit. We can sort out all the details when the time comes, but I'd be counting on you to do the buying and selling. We should probably get a village tax in right at the start.
Hang on. Selling?
Rit asked. Well, yeah, I exclaimed with a nod. We can't just keep buying, right? We'll run out of money. But if I start selling crafted goods right back to them?
Then we'll end up with more money, and Aldford will grow!
Rit finished for me, fully on board with the idea.
You're sure they'll go for it? It'll be a pretty mindless and repetitive process, just hunting, prospecting, or logging non-stop.
There's one thing I've learned in all my years, Rit, I said with a smile. Adventurers will do anything if given the proper motivation, even if the job is a mindless, repetitive grind. A couple hours later, I badly needed to stretch my legs and was walking through Aldford with a box of broken and shredded spider chitin destined for the fire pit. I'd managed to repair the four sets of armor without too much of an issue, directly replacing the shredded chitin with new pieces, along with fixing torn stitching and covering any tears in the leather itself. Unfortunately, with all the damage that had slowly been accumulating on Drace's and my armor, I figured it'd just be a matter of time before I was forced to craft a brand new set of armor from scratch. Oh well, maybe I'll be able to make something new by that point. As I strode through the village, the ever-growing azure oak tree caught my eye, having doubled in size and height since I saw it yesterday. Is that thing gonna ever stop growing? I wondered idly to myself as the full tree came into view. Before long, it'll be a notable sight on the horizon. As I walked by the tree, I spotted Donovan leaning against it, pressing his ear firmly against the bark. Angling my path towards him to see what he was up to, I cautiously called out. "Hey, Donovan!" I started, not to startle the mage. I don't think that works the same way a seashell does.
What?
Despite my best efforts, Donovan flinched at my arrival.
Lyrian, good. You may have answers. What in the world is this?
Pausing to glance at the tree, I looked back at Donovan. By my guess, it's an ether-warped oak tree.
I can see that,
Donovan hissed with exasperation.
But how did it get here? This shouldn't be possible.
Offering Donovan a shrug, I set the box I was carrying down, then began to explain yesterday morning's events in more detail. And now it seems to grow a handspan every hour or so. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less.
That's...
Donovan shook his head, at a loss for words.
I have never seen anything like this before. I don't think anyone has.
Really? I asked in disbelief. No one has tried pouring a vial of ether on something to see what happens?
Hardly anyone has a vial of ether,
Donovan exclaimed.
Let alone uses it so frivolously. The effort that it takes to create ether staggers the mind.